Hello, this is Dan Barish, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland.
And this is Matt Shepard, the Mormon conservative from Seattle.
You're a libertarian, not a conservative. I get to define you. Yeah. And we
Well, I'm a conservative libertarian. I have conservative values.
We are not
that
allowed to have
changed.
More than one identity at a time, jerk.
No, a conservative libertarian is my identity. And if I had to define, like, conservative, on the conservative and liberal panel, I am definitely conservative. You know, on the freedom versus tyranny level, I definitely go towards the freedom side, so.
Indeed. Yes. Anyway, in spite of that exchange, we are the common ground.
At least that's what we hope to find. So,
yes.
Today's episode is a little bit of a departure. We are going to see if we can convince. So we each have come up with a list of ideas and principles that we think we can convince 75% of America to. We're going to bring them up one at a time and discuss them. Dan, would you like to do the honors?
Sure. So my number one is, we are all entitled to freedom. This includes both the negative and the positive freedoms, which by this I mean positive freedom means to do as we wish to do, at least within reason, as long as it harms no one else. And the negative freedom is to be left alone. Or, you know, positive freedom, you can do things. Negative freedom is not having things done to you.
Yes, the liberty and pursuit of happiness portions of the Declaration of Independence. You know, the liberty being, think in their minds, being the government will not oppress you, and the pursuit of happiness being positive thing where you can go and do what you want to do and pursue what you think will make you happy.
Mm-hmm. So what's your number one?
My number one is the other freedom listed in the Declaration of Independence, the life. People and life is important and shouldn't be bandied about.
Agreed. Number two. Okay. This country was founded on noble ideals, but its execution of these ideals is highly imperfect, and many minority groups continue to experience injustice in many manifestations.
I think I could agree to that, yeah.
I mean, to me, part of the point of striving for an extremely high ideal is you are inevitably going to fail, because as humans, we are imperfect. But the striving makes us better.
That I can definitely agree with. We should have ideals, and I believe that our founders set really high ideals. And again, I definitely think we have failed to reach those ideals as individuals and as a society for 200 years. But I think collectively, we've done a pretty bang-up job, at least comparatively to the rest of the fallible human race.
Yeah, quite frankly, we have.
You know, between us and England, we were basically the first people to completely ban slavery.
England was down in the slave trade long before we were, though. There is that.
We had a transitionary plan to end the slave trade itself. It was put in law early, and it was ignored, or I can't remember if it was ignored or appealed. But, you know, that was put in where there was like a long transition period, which would have put us somewhere on par with England. But due to the purse strings being connected to some people with interest in the slave trade, that wasn't held through. And it took a major war for us to realize, oh yeah, this isn't a good idea. And some people still didn't get the idea out of their heads. But luckily now it is.
Although, unfortunately, there are now more slaves in the world than there have ever been in the past. But at least American slavery is over.
Yeah, you know, and
although,
like, the slavery is I think
it is worthwhile to point out that the one form of slavery, the one form of involuntary servitude that the Constitution explicitly permits is that of people who are being punished, which is why prisoners can be made to work for very low wages or for free.
Yes.
And, you know, in certain states, license plates are produced by prisoners, but also major corporations have this done. Martha Stewart uses prison labor. So does Victoria's Secret. Those are just a couple that I know off the top of my head.
Yeah, you know, there's an interesting idea along that. Being in prison, I think, would be a semi-voluntary slavery. If you get my drift, like, you're the person who chooses to perform the acts that lead to that.
At least in theory.
Yeah, that's the theory.
At least in theory, you chose to do something you shouldn't have done. And this is true for some of them, but not all.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it is It is typically much easier to guard and contain prisoners that have tasks to perform than it is ones that are just sitting around all day or doing, like doing their own thing. At least in my research, you're the prison expert, Dan, so.
I work in a jail, not a prison. I hasten to add for listeners, which is different. And I know you know the difference, but to make the difference, I want to assail the media, which is something conservatives spend more time doing than liberals do. But the media has really, really messed this up. Jail and prison, okay, dear listeners, jail and prison are not the same thing. They are not. In prison, somebody who's in prison has been sentenced to do time. Somebody who is in jail is typically awaiting trial, but maybe serving a very short term. So, person who is in prison has, by definition, been sentenced. A person in jail, you cannot necessarily make that assumption. So, I am a social worker in the Cuyahoga County Jail, and one thing we have in the jail are trustees. And what that means, basically, they perform a lot of the day-to-day labor that keeps the jail going, in the sense of they serve meals and that sort of thing. And it's actually quite a popular program. And one of the difficulties of being incarcerated can be just the sheer boredom. I think that's part of why a lot of people do like to serve as a trustee, is that it gives them something to do. But at the same time, you have to be very careful who you allow to be a trustee. It needs to be, well, somebody who is trustworthy, whole point of the word, because you need to make sure that whatever individual you're permitting to do that isn't going to be causing trouble, because they're going to be walking around the facility. And I mean, certainly under supervision at all times, but nonetheless.
Yes. So.
But anyhow, I've never worked in a prison. I've never even set foot into a prison, so I can't comment on how they work. I've just seen them on TV, and
You've never seen
I
him on the
think.
side of the road?
No, I've never driven by a prison. I think maybe once or twice in my life I've driven by a sign that says there is a prison nearby, do not pick up hitchhikers, but I've never seen one from the road, actually.
I'm in prison people actually doing work on the side of the road.
No, Ohio does not, to my knowledge, have a chain gang program, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I know a lot of like roadside cleanup and stuff are done here. Like I've seen them on the side of the road, like cleaning things up and stuff. So orange jumpsuits and all that.
Yeah, seeing people in
Anyway.
captivity is an adjustment process. So, point the third, we are entitled to privacy. We covered that in a previous podcast, and I think to both you and I, it's kind of a we are entitled to privacy, period.
Yeah, we are entitled to privacy, but in public, private, all that sort of stuff, there's a certain amount of privacy that is needed.
Yep.
Fourth Amendment. Woo!
Yay. Number four. Might be a bit more contentious for some, but I think we can agree. American military power should not be used to dominate the world, but to protect the United States.
Yeah, I think we could get, well, could we get 75% of the US to, like,
I'm not. Maybe. I mean, where I would carve out a slight exception is that we have a largesse that enough that no one else in the world has got, and I think that there is space to call for humanitarian missions, but you have to be selective about when you choose to do those, because you can't save the whole world.
No, you can't.
And I think that, for example, right now President Obama is caught in a horrid catch-22, with Iraq, because on the one hand, we cannot politically reoccupy Iraq. Americans, both Republican and Democrat, I think, are absolutely sick of war and do not want to re-engage at that scale. But on the other hand, if Iraq completely falls to ISIS or whoever else, then it will be, we've sacrificed nearly $1 trillion in all of those soldiers' lives, and for what?
For it to
And I
be
really.
taken over a couple of years after transitioning out of there to buy
Exactly.
a Islamic state that was worse than Saddam Hussein.
Exactly. And I really don't know what in blazes Obama is supposed to do. I really
Yeah.
don't.
Well, I think first of all, we need to stop creating power vacuums.
Yeah, well, we're really inept as an occupying force. I have to say that. Britain
At
did a
least
lot better.
recently,
Yeah, well.
recently we have we've kind of lost our ability to occupy things well. I think probably since the fall of communism, I think we've probably failed
We
with this.
did an excellent job in Japan. That's my humble opinion.
And
We
Germany.
took the. Absolutely. But I mean, Japan, even more so, in the sense of. I mean, Germany, you did have a brief and failed flirtation with democracy under the Weimar Republic. But Japan came from autocracy, in which, at least post-Meiji, the emperor was no less than a godhead. And maybe before that, I don't have enough understanding of Shinto to talk about that authoritatively at all.
It was more provincial, kind of like feudalism, so...
Right. Well, there was the shogunate era, in which the emperor was certainly present, but was relegated to, you know, you should go make art and study things, and don't you dare get into the political process. And the Meiji Restoration,
the warlords ruled everything
of the emperor. And so, anyways, you take that culture, and you create a parliamentary democracy, which is stable.
Yeah.
And to me, that's absolutely amazing.
Come a long way.
And there are people, you know, even now, I've heard people say, you know, that MacArthur made a really big mistake by not having Emperor Hirohito tried and executed for crimes against humanity. And I can see that if you believe in rigidly applying justice, then...
Which traditional Japanese idea is to do so.
But, yes. But the thing is, we had to win the peace. And if we executed Hirohito, yeah, that'll totally win hearts and minds.
Well, that's actually Asian Eastern thinking is very different than Western thinking. So,
in
like
terms
in
of
chess,
collective responsibility versus individual responsibility, you mean?
A bit, but more than that. In chess, which is kind of a lot the Eastern idea. I mean, it came out of the Middle East, but the idea is, you know, you topple the king, you have the power.
Right.
In the East. In Eastern ideas, like you've seen Mulan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mulan, the cartoon. So in Mulan, the Shanyu is trying to get the emperor to bow to him, and so he gets really angry at the emperor who won't bow to him. And so in that, basically, if you make the in Eastern idea, if you make the previous leader bow to you and become subservient to you, then you become the new leader. You know, so they're all like the actual leaders are often kept in prison and other things like that for long periods of time. So, you know, I mean, it made perfect sense that they're doing so. That's kind of it's a very different way of thinking. And I've studied things, like I had a good friend who was studying Chinese anthropology. It's really interesting ideas and completely different way of thinking.
Hmm.
You know, like they don't understand sin and the concept of I did something wrong, I should pay for it. Their concept of sin is the only thing wrong is the only thing that's bad is their honor. It's all about the honor that is their righteousness. So if you have your honor in the eyes of the people, then you are a righteous person. If the people perceive you as being unrighteous or doing things, then that's what gives you your righteousness. It's not the innate wrongness of the thing that you do.
Huh.
And so that's why in China, they do all these terrible things, but then, or in North Korea as well. They do all these terrible things, but then they puff themselves up, saying, like, look, this is what we're doing. Because to them, the goodness is in their public perception, not innately in the things that they're doing and the things that they do. And that's part of Taoism, Confucianist roots. I think it's been twisted, especially in the case of places like North Korea, but it's based on those roots.
Mm-hmm.
No. Anyway, well, maybe we could get back
on
topic here.
Because I'm not an authority on Chinese anthropology, so I'm just going, because I don't have anything much to contribute there.
Yeah.
So
let me get the next, I'll go here.
Yes.
I think, you know, we need to care for our fellow men, those that aren't able to care for themselves.
Agreed.
The practical implications of that, the details are things, but I think that principle is that we need to care for the downtrodden and the people that need help.
I think the conservative / libertarian perspective is that that's the responsibility of the private sphere, especially perhaps of faith-based organizations that are so inclined just from the basis of their whole philosophy. And the liberal perspective is private charity absolutely has a place and needs to be honored and worked with, but there are also certain problems that are so big that only government possesses the scale to properly address them. And where I think we can both come together on that is that the government's money should not be wasted, the taxpayers' money should not be wasted, and that not every program that is in place is necessarily making the best use of taxpayer funds.
Mm-hmm. The cupboard is not bare, as it were.
Right.
Anyway, little Nancy Pelosi reference. Anyway, all right, your turn, Dan.
Okay. When I look at it, my number five is actually pretty similar to number three, but it goes a bit further. The government has no business regulating private life.
Yeah, yes.
Although it's interesting. Like, I have some positions that even as a liberal might be considered slightly radical, such as, for example, I would have, other than it be entirely unenforceable, which is why I wouldn't bother making a big fuss about it, but I wouldn't get worked up at all if somebody said, we're going to ban spanking. We're going to make it illegal to spank. I think spanking is a form of child abuse and has no business being done ever. But again, that's a radical position, but that would be a regulation of private life, certainly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that does have... You know, I think that the line that you're drawing there is... I can't go walk up to somebody in public and hit them in the face. Like,
totally not.
And so I think you're drawing, you know, without consequences, you know, and that sort of thing is regulated because it's a public thing. But the private life... You're basically turning the parts of private life public. And,
right.
You know, I think that that's where that line from your public life to your private life is drawn, I think, is where the difference lies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dan, you've never had children, so...
Correct.
I will warn you.
Yes.
There are times when your child will not listen unless there is some sort of physical force involved. No matter what the child, who the child is, whether it's you picking them up and doing it, like with them, or you know, like there's some sort of physicality is going to be necessary with your child at some point. Like whether it's they're playing with something dangerous, so you pick them up and move them, or you yell their name to get them to stop. Like there's some sort of physical thing. Whether you don't necessarily need to spank them or that sort of thing.
Oh yeah. No, to be clear, I'm not. Even though I'm not a dad yet, I'm not naive enough to think, oh, well, gentle words will do everything. No, there are times when you have to lift a child up and take them away from something dangerous, or when you have to yell or they're going to burn them, you know, whatever. I'm just saying hitting is never okay. I'm just, that's where I'm going. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, anyway. But the general idea that private life should not be regulated by the government, yes, I agree.
All right. I only had five items. I don't know when you...
Well, let me throw something out here. I've got, you know, from principles down to something hyper-specific,
okay.
Term limits for members of Congress.
You know, yeah. I mean, I can go back and forth on that. Because on the one hand, you don't want what I think so often does happen, which is that a legislator stays in Washington so long that he or she is fundamentally more a creature of the Capitol than they are of whatever place they're supposed to be representing.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we can't forget that in Congress there is very much such a thing as seniority. The relationships that build up over time in any political system, even just a workplace.
And in my mind, that seniority is one of the biggest problems in Congress.
That says maybe, but what do you do without the... I mean, seniority is partly just because when people build up relationships, it's just that much easier to work in the context of those relationships. If, on the other hand, you get together a new group of people every few years, they've never met each other, much less trust each other deeply, how are they going to work on anything serious?
Actually, well, in my experience, the things that are serious should get through, and when you have a stale group of people together, the ideas that they'll accept, you know, and the things that they push for and want doesn't go through. I mean, for example, Harry Reid is the squabbles between the two leaders of Congress, Harry Reid and John Boehner.
Mm-hmm.
It is basically an epic battle of control.
Oh, sure.
And so, like, there are over 300 bills which have been passed by the House. You know, these aren't just like, you know, repeal Obamacare bills. Like, these 300 bills, like over 100 of them had close to unanimous votes, including most Democrats. And they've been sitting on the desk of the Senate, but the Senate ignores them because it was passed by a Republican Congress.
Mm.
You know, and it's like, according to Senate rules, it's completely up to Harry Reid and his cabal of leaders to push forward, and they can completely control the debate.
We should acknowledge that the same would probably happen if the situations were reversed, if the House were Democratic and the Senate Republican. The game is one of obstruction, regardless of which party's in which house.
Yes, I agree. And that whole idea of my party is in power and I need to control that power so that my next election will come off and I can maintain that power through my next election. If there's term limits, that largely goes away because there isn't this I'm going to stay in power for 30 years.
I hear that, but in this position. On the other hand, I think part of what makes Congress so ineffective is the political polarization. You know, we can talk about term limits, but we also need to have a big conversation about gerrymandering and the way in which I don't think we have as much of a problem as Democrats, but the Republican Party seems to have this huge problem where at least the representatives, I don't know if it's as true of senators, are in a situation, well, maybe it would be as true, I don't know, are in a situation where if they show any signs of being a moderate or a less generous term, a rhino, they have more to fear from a primary challenge than they have to fear from a Democrat. And this forbids them from reaching any type of consensus with the other side of the aisle. The only thing they can do is mindlessly oppose or otherwise be deemed a traitor to the cause.
Well, that's actually becoming more true recently. Like, the incumbents in primaries 10, 15 years ago were averaging 90% in their primaries. Now that average is closer to 65, 70%.
Right. I mean, the incumbency.
And
is
so, in my mind, that's a good thing in my mind, because the ability to, for the people themselves, to like get together and say, "Hey, I don't like this representative. They don't represent me," and to cut into that incumbency. I mean, if you like the person, okay. But most people, they just know the person's name, and
right.
They don't know all of their votes. They don't look into that
right.
sort of thing.
Sure.
And so it's.
But the thing is, keep in mind, of course, that most people prefer moderation over extremes, whether extremely liberal or extremely conservative. Like, I have very little patience with the far left, and I have very little patience with the far right either. I think both are silly and destructive and counterproductive and aren't willing to engage the world as it is, only the world as they wish it were.
Mm-hmm.
The extremist libertarians I've dealt with, not yourself, are so entrenched in their ideas that they would believe that they were right and one has acknowledged so, even if it broke in reality, even if the idea didn't work, they would still say, I'm going to do it because it's still the right thing to do, even if it doesn't work, which is like, well, if it doesn't work, you probably need to go back to the drawing board because it didn't work. Probably seemed like a great idea, but apparently you were wrong.
Yeah.
And extremist liberals need
my
to get their heads
around... My thought on
communism,
by the way.
Oh, right.
That's my thought on communism, yeah.
Agreed.
Anyway.
That socialism and communism have never worked, have in fact devolved into tyranny every single time they've ever been implemented on a national scale. And so I have very little patience for that either. What I wish for is an intelligently regulated capitalism. And the problem of gerrymandering is that if you skew voting districts so that incumbents don't have to fear just a primary challenge, but a primary challenge from the right, and knowing that that electoral district is skewed to favor people who are more extreme, you're going to end up with people who are less than good at compromising. And even if you're in favor of term limits, you do understand as a mature adult that the best decision making is always made by people who are willing to compromise instead of people who are going to walk into a room and say, my way right now.
I agree with you if you're referring to policy. People should have principles and they should stick to those principles. And if they don't, then I think they shouldn't be ruling this. So compromising your policies, not necessarily not your principles. So just
right.
as long as that
or
distinction
in other words,
is there, I would agree with you. Yes.
Never to let the perfect be the enemy of the good is basically what I'm thrusting at.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
what I'm saying. I mean, random example, The first civil rights legislation that passed Congress since Reconstruction was passed in 1957 under Senate Majority Leader Lyndon Johnson. And what was it? It was an extremely, extremely weak protection of voting rights, which entitled people who obstructed the vote to be tried by jury. And this was a law that was simultaneously nothing and everything, because on the one hand, holy crap, you just passed the first civil rights legislation since Reconstruction in a Senate that has repeatedly defeated anti-lynching bills. On the other hand, we're still talking about the Jim Crow South, where you're absolutely going to face jury nullification if you try to protect the civil rights of black people. So, on the ground, the law did nothing in and of itself, but yet the act of passing it was huge.
You know, it changed the public perception, which, you know, is the, I think, perception is one of the, is the main mover in America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll relegate these, anything else we have on our lists or any future lists to future episodes.
Yes.
So,
all right, folks.
This is Matt signing off.
And this is Dan signing off. Take care.